Like many Canadian families, like many of our families here, my family has been touched by war. My grandfather Frank and his brother Mickey were part of the Loyal Edmonton Regiment, the Loyal Eddies as they were known, that landed in Sicily in July of 1943 as part of our country's involvement in World War II. The Canadians quickly took Sicily and worked up their way up the boot of Italy as part of the Canadian 1st Canadian Infantry Division, and eventually through France and into Northwest Europe, where they fought until the end of the war. It was not common for brothers to be part of the same unit, but my grandfather and Mickey liked it that way. They could look out for each other. In addition to being brothers, they were best friends. They were each other's confidants their whole lives. Throughout their lives, they when they felt they didn't have anyone else to talk to, they always had each other. Before the war, my grandfather was seriously considering becoming a priest, to the point where people around him would call him Father Frank. But after returning to Canada, it was Mickey that introduced him to the woman who would become my grandmother. And life took a different path. Mickey was an amazing softball player. He bought me my first t-ball set and showed up for all my games. He taught me how to tie a fish hook. He taught me the value of family and friendship, about showing up for each other, especially in the hard times. I wish this was true, but it's not. Like many Canadian families, the story of my family has been touched by war. My grandfather and his brother were part of the Loyal Edmonton Regiment who fought in Italy. That part was true. But on October 21st, 1944, just outside of Cesena, Italy, Mickey was killed in a firefight with German soldiers. It was not common for brothers to be part of the same unit for a reason. My grandfather saw his brother die. And in the stories that came back from soldiers who witnessed it, the scream of terror, the profound grief of my grandfather in that moment was so raw, so visceral, that it was enough to tear the heavens apart. On November 1st, 1944, my great-grandmother received a telegraph from the Minister of National Defense telling her that her son Mickey had died. What she would not know until later is that in very real ways, she had also lost her other son, Frank, on that day. This poem by the World War I poet Rudyard Kipling was not written about my grandfather, but it might have been. I have a dream, a dreadful dream, a dream that is never done. I watch a man go out of his mind, and he is my mother's son. They pushed him into a mental home, and that is like the grave, for they do not let you sleep upstairs, and you're not allowed to shave. And it was not disease or crime which got him landed there, but because they laid on my mother's son more than a man could bear. What with noise and fear of death, waking and wounds and cold, they filled the cup for my mother's son fuller than it could hold. And they broke his body and his mind, and yet they made him live, and they asked more of my mother's son than any man could give. And no one knows when he'll get well, so there he'll have to be, and spite the beard in the looking glass, I know that man is me. My grandfather came back from the war broken, if not physically broken, emotionally, relationally, spiritually. In Italy, he witnessed the church's collusion with the fascist regime, and the man that many called Father Frank never stepped foot in a church again. He did go on to marry my grandmother and have a family, but he was distant, rarely fully present. He would often just disappear for weeks on end without telling anyone where he was going. He had no way to process his grief, and so he separated himself. This way of coping through separation is something my father learned from his father. While he has done his best, when under pressure, my father shuts down, keeps secrets, he leaves. And there are times, I cannot deny it, when I do the same thing, perpetuating the cycle with my wife, with my children. On this day of remembrance, we are challenged to hold together two imperatives. First, we are to honor those who have served and are currently serving in the military. We are to honor their sacrifices and the sacrifices of their families, and to never take for granted the values and principles they put their lives on the line to uphold. At the same time, we must also acknowledge that war is trauma. War is trauma that destroys lives and families and communities. War is trauma that continues to leak poison many decades after the guns are put down. War is trauma, and it rips the very fabric of our humanity. On this day, we remember, but do not glorify war. We honor those who have served and are currently serving by not whitewashing suffering, by not mythologizing violence. We honor them by laying bare the reality of what we are capable of, by looking in the looking glass and pledging to do things differently. Some Sadducees, who say there is no resurrection, came to Jesus and asked him a question. Teacher, Moses wrote for us that if a man's brother dies, leaving a wife but no children, the man shall marry the widow and raise up children for his brother. Now there were seven brothers, and the first married and died childless. Then the second, and then the third married her, and so in the same way all seven died childless. Finally, the woman also died. In the resurrection, whose wife will the woman be? The Sadducees were a wealthy, conservative, elite group of priests associated with the temple leadership in Jerusalem. These were the powerful aristocrats who benefited from the cozy relationship to the Roman regime. They were hierarchical in their worldview, legalistic in their function, and literalistic in their understanding of Scripture. Their interpretation would not go beyond the literal words on the page. And since resurrection is not explicitly mentioned in the Torah, the Sadducees rejected even the possibility of it. For them, this world is profitable and comfortable, so why look any deeper? And into their comfortable world, this rabble-rouser Jesus, this itinerant rabbi from the backwoods, this unsophisticated Nazarene with a carpenter's hands, he comes into the great city stirring up the crowds. He comes threatening to tip their profitable apple cart of the Pax Romana, the strong-armed order of the Roman Empire. And so they come to him with an agenda to delegitimize him, to embarrass him in front of the people. They try to trick him with their riddles, trap him in technicalities. Whose wife will she be, this woman who married seven brothers? If you are so smart, Jesus of Nazareth, whose wife will she be in the resurrection? God is not a God of the dead, but of the living. For to him, all of them are alive. Jesus does not fall into the trap. He will not be tricked. He does not get mired in technicalities or boxed in by the words on the page. He elevates the discourse to the level of God and asserts all with ears to hear that God does not let us go, even beyond the veil of death. Jesus points to a different reality where women are not passed along from man to man like chattel. He points to a different reality beyond suffering, beyond violence, beyond the cycles of harm that all too often dominate our lives. God is not a God of death, but of life. In the church calendar, we read this text now, just weeks before Advent. But in the ministry of the human Jesus, we are only days away from Easter. Perhaps this is the light by which we should read this text, this talk of resurrection, this affirmation of love that transcends every trauma. Because before Jesus reaches Easter Sunday, he must go through Good Friday. Soon he will be seized by the Roman regime, Soon he will be accused by the religious leaders, condemned by the crowds, and abandoned by his friends. Soon he will be beaten, dragged up a hill, and while his mother watches on, he will be nailed to a cross. Soon he will let loose a scream of grief so raw, so visceral, that the earth will shake, the rocks will split, and the veil between heaven and earth will be torn in two. The crucifixion was real. It was violent and it was horrible. On this day, especially on this day, we cannot glorify it, we cannot whitewash or mythologize it. In the crucifixion, as in war, the veil is torn, and there is nowhere to hide from the reality of what we are capable of. I have looked in the looking glass and have seen myself. There is sin in the world. That potential exists within each of us and within each human-constructed system, organization, government, church. There is trauma and violence and suffering in the world. But on this day, especially on this day, we proclaim that they do not get the last word. This is the promise of a God who, in the life of Jesus, has felt trauma and violence and suffering, who has felt the effects of human sin, but does not fall into the trap of retaliation, of perpetuation. God breaks the cycle. Through resurrection, death itself passes away. God is not the God of death, but of life. The incarnation of Christ reveals the human and the divine united. The resurrection of Christ reveals a love that transcends every trauma. As God's beloved children, we are invited into a life unified with God, into a love that does not end, and not just in the hereafter, but in the here and now. As Jesus says in his great prayer, on earth as in heaven. As God's beloved children, we are called to live now in a reality where all life is seen as sacred. We are called to build now a world where the dehumanized are restored, where no one is treated like chattel, where we quiet our war machines and find different ways to solve our problems. On July 4th, 2007, Captain Matthew Daw was killed while serving with the Princess Patricia's Canadian Light Infantry in Afghanistan. He died on his son Lucas's second birthday, just weeks before he was scheduled to return home. Captain Daw's mother, Renee Sampson Daw, has been named this year's National Silver Cross Mother. Tomorrow in Ottawa, Ms. Daw will place a wreath at the National War Memorial on behalf of all Canadian mothers who have lost a son or daughter in the course of their service to our country. Renee Sampson Daw has three other sons in the military. On this day of remembrance, we are challenged to hold together two imperatives. We are to honor those who have served and are currently serving in the military. We are to honor their sacrifices and the sacrifices of their families, and to never take for granted the values and principles they put their lives on the line to uphold. At the same time, as people of faith, we are called to follow the God of the living. We are called to break the cycles of death, not just in the hereafter, but in the here and now. We are called to end all collusion with the regimes of violence and to build a world where all life is sacred. On this day, especially on this day, we are called to love life. We are to seek a reality where families are whole, a reality where brothers may live to love each other's grandchildren. May it be so. Amen.